Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Lee from FPL Family.
And I'm FPL Harry.
Well, Harry, most weeks this podcast does seem to start with a comment on Mr. Erling Haaland. So who are we to break that trend? Last week, Haaland was captained by over 7 million managers, and this week it was just 5.6 million. So it's definitely trending downwards. That was Haaland's lowest captaincy since game week 16. So who had your armband this week, Harry? And how did the game week go for you?
Yeah, so the decision on captaincy was basically enough to change what would have been a red arrow into a green arrow. So I went Bruno Fernandes, nice, captain, with a very last minute second assist, which also got him a couple of bonus points. But I have to say, what was it, 25 minutes into that Manchester City game where Haaland picked up his first assist and it looked all one-way traffic in that game.
You were panicking.
I was panicking. And I think everyone who decided to take Haaland on had that same fear at that time in that game. And you get that every time you take on Haaland, whoever he's playing against, right? You have that fear when they go to kick off. If he gets an early return, you know it's a long wait to see until the full-time whistle goes. But yeah, enough for me to get a green arrow. The real highlights were Gabriel Eight, who just seems unstoppable at the moment. Once again, now he's back from injury, I decided to keep your striker Hugo Ekitike for 13 points.
Nice.
Very happy,
nice,
to finally get some points from him, although a lot of people moved to João Pedro, who I think we'll talk about, and the hero that is my cheap midfielder in Elliot Anderson, who needs Harry Wilson scoring free kicks every week when you get Elliot Anderson scoring 7 points without even an attacking return.
Ticks over, doesn't he, Elliot Anderson, just every week. It's phenomenal.
I know, he's one of those that it's infuriating to own at times because I spend my time counting DEFCON. And then at the end of the week, he's never going to be the issue in my team. He's always going to be the one that was there turning up. Whereas there's lots of other players in my midfield, at my attack, that I'd rather be selling at the moment who are not scoring goals. So at least Anderson is, I think he's 10th for all midfielders over the past six game weeks. Another 7-pointer here. I feel like he is going quite under the radar just because he's not explosive. But we'll talk about that when we get to it. How was your week?
Yeah, pretty good. 73 for me this week, which was enough for a green, which is good. It was all about my transfers in, actually. I had a bit of a splurge during the week on transfers. Did three. I did the Fernandeses in. So I did Bruno in, as well as Enzo Fernandez in. And I also, because we'll talk about the Chelsea fixture run right now, I also bought in João Pedro. I did it quite early on. I never do this, Harry, but I did the João Pedro transfer last Sunday. So, you know, just as the previous game week was finishing, I went early because I thought, well, it looks like he's going to go up in price. A lot of people going to get on him and I don't want to be priced out. So I did quite early Ekitike at the João Pedro. And as the week went on and then obviously the Napoli game happened, he played a lot of minutes. I had regret. I had the FPL regret. I was like, well, he's definitely going to be benched at the weekend. And so it proved. So given that he came on and performed well and got the points, I feel as if I've got the right end of the lucky stick there. I honestly do. I've got away with one there, I think. But I do have a little bit of regret about selling Hugo Ekitike. We are going to obviously talk about him a bit later on because I think I need a plan to get him back in. All of a sudden, we've got a bunch of forwards that we want, having sat here for a few weeks and gone, well, there's no options to go alongside Haaland. Maybe you go Thiago, but that's it. We've suddenly got a bunch of forwards that we want to discuss. So yeah, my three transfers in were good. 73 is all right. Those three did well. Semenyo got me 7 as well. I had Gabriel and Timber at the back. Yeah, not a bad week. Not a bad week. We're generally trending in the right direction. Generally trending. And I think that's the way my season's gone a bit, Harry. I have two or three sort of okay green arrows. I chip away at the rank. And then I tend to, when I have a red arrow, it tends to be quite a big one. It tends to be quite catastrophic. So I'm trying to avoid that going forward. But the game I'd like to start with, and you'll like this, the game I'd like to start with is your lot. I want to go to Stamford Bridge because talk about a game of two halves. I don't know what happened or what was said in the dressing room at halftime. I think we know what happened. He made some changes, didn't he, Liam Rossini? And I have to say, the new Chelsea boss is really growing on me. I wasn't sure, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't sure when he first came in. I thought, is it the big name that a club like Chelsea really need? But he's really growing on me. He's decisive in his actions. You know, he saw that it wasn't working on that side with Garnacho and maybe Hato, made the changes. And listen, as a João Pedro owner, you know, coming into this game, he's benched. I'm thinking, well, is his game time at risk? Is he going to be rotated more than I thought he was, having gone early on that transfer? But if anything, I now look at it and go, well, he's a key cog in that Chelsea machine. He came on and made such a difference, didn't he, alongside some of the other substitutions that Rossini made. So, listen, you're the Chelsea fan. I'll hand the mic to you. What did you make of the game? And what did you make of the tactical changes that Rossini made at halftime that fundamentally changed the course of this game?
Yeah, so I'm a no Chelsea owner going into this. And at halftime, really? Sat in the stadium, I was a bit like, well, I've made the right decision. This is not how I wanted it to go. And I'd quite like my team to be winning at this point. So I suddenly looked at it thinking, I'm in a difficult position here. Of course, I wanted Chelsea to win. But I then realized that if we were going to turn it around, it was never going to do anything good for my FPL rank by full time. Right. But yeah, I think that we learned a couple of things from that game, and it makes things a lot clearer going into the upcoming game weeks where we've got a few good games. It's worth noting, of course, that if there is a surprise turnaround in the cup this evening, that Chelsea could end up with a double in game week 26, yes, which would make them even more appealing than maybe they already are. Now, it's probably unlikely, and that's coming from a Chelsea fan. I don't think many people give us that much of a chance. But if we play like we did in the first half against West Ham, it could be an ugly night for us. But if we play like we did in the second half, then I think we've got a chance. But even without that, I think the picks for Chelsea became a lot clearer to me. I think João Pedro is the one to go with first and mm-hmm. foremost. I think he's a better pick than Enzo. I actually thought Enzo, despite the late goal, and actually we've heard quotes this week about how his fitness is great. You know, we saw him arriving at the box in the 92nd, 93rd minute, and that's just what he's able to do. So he feels like the sort of minutes monster that we've got going forward. But it does feel like João Pedro is the one that I would like to have. And I feel quite jealous of those people that have got him and went early on him, despite the fact that I didn't think he'd start this game. Delap wasn't particularly great, and he hasn't been particularly great when he's been given minutes recently. So I'm not particularly worried about that from a João Pedro point of view. Palmer doesn't really feel like he's worth the money. You feel like you're paying a lot.
You can't go Palmer, can you, right now? No.
No, it feels like you're paying the money for penalties, and that's really about it. He doesn't do anything that Enzo or João Pedro do. So going forward, Enzo and João Pedro are definitely the two to own, and their minutes look pretty good going forward, I think, now. I think João Pedro is clearly becoming our number one under the new manager. But a lot of people invested defensively, and we have shipped a lot of goals recently. We're actually conceding more XG than half of the league at the moment. We're in the bottom half for XGC over the course of the season. Our defense is actually not that great, despite the fact that people are looking to go there, but our attack is top for XG over the course of the season. So it does feel like there is a clear way to invest in Chelsea, and it should be attack over defense.
Yeah, I don't know if you can... I agree. I don't think you can trust the Chelsea defense at the moment. I think in particular that side with Garnacho and Hato, like I said in that first half, Wan-Bissaka and Bowen in particular they were fantastic, but I don't know, and the Man United fans will maybe attest to this a little bit, the sort of Garnacho's ability to track back and sort of help out his fullback wasn't really there. I think Rossini spotted it. So I think in the second half, he did defend a lot better, but I think in general, you're right. I think it is the attack in which we want to invest, and I've got Enzo, I've got João Pedro now. And we probably should timestamp this a little bit, right? We're recording this on Tuesday morning. At the moment, we don't know the result of the Carabao Cup second leg between Chelsea and Arsenal. But by the time people listen to this, there's a reasonable chance that game, you know, they'll know the outcome. We'll know whether Chelsea or Arsenal will have the double game week in game week 26. And if it is Chelsea, then I think, yeah, those two look particularly good. A word for West Ham, anything that we should discuss there? I mean, Boeing continues to tick over. And actually, if you look at the next five fixtures, they don't look too bad. They've got Burnley coming up next. And I don't think we're going to spend too much time talking about Burnley's performance against Sunderland on Monday night this week, because it was pretty dire, right? So that looks like a nice fixture in game week 25 for West Ham. United and Bournemouth at home, followed by Liverpool away. Yeah, okay, mate. I said they're nice. Maybe it's mixed given the form of Manchester United and Liverpool. But any love for West Ham?
I thought they were really good in the first half, and I have a Nottingham Forest supporter in my household. So we were looking at that game thinking Chelsea need a win for Chelsea, but also we could do with it down at the bottom, because if West Ham play like they did in the first half for the rest of the season, they've got a lot of competition down there and they'll start picking up points. But if they play like they did in the second half, then we'll see another story. Very impressed by Bowen. Those short-term fixtures are all right, particularly Burnley this week. Somerville also a bit cheaper, 5.5 in midfield, scored a very good goal in the first half. Wan-Bissaka a couple of assists, but he was the biggest XGI overperformer of the entire game week. So wouldn't really read too much into that being representative going forward. I think there's a couple of punts in Bowen and Somerville if you want them, but I think we're probably prioritizing transfers elsewhere. So let's start with my team and let's move to your team. Let's go to the big win
with
at Anfield. Yeah, absolutely. And it feels a little bit like Liverpool are starting to turn the corner. They're actually top for expected goals conceded over the last six and third over the season. But it is the attack that is starting to get a bit more attention. Wirtz and Ekitike in particular, both getting double-digit returns this week. I'm very happy that I've still got Ekitike in my team. I want to hear your thoughts, particularly on them going forward, between the two of them, if you're looking at either to get into your team going forward.
Yeah, the relationship between them two looks like it's just going from strength to strength. I think early on in the season, I think Ekitike has always been there, right? He's hit the ground running, I think, as soon as he came into Liverpool. And he's all right. He's been a little bit unlucky with injury. And I think there was a bit of rotation when Isak was there, because I think, you know, Arne Slot was looking at both of them to see who's going to be his number nine for this season. But certainly on early on in the season, a lot of us went for Wirtz early on, either in game week one, game week two. Wasn't really doing the business, was he, as we expected? So we kind of transferred him out. He went down in price a little bit. But listen, if you've got on Florian Wirtz over the last few weeks, then he looks absolutely sensational. Like I said, the relationship between the two looks great. Defensively, I don't want to talk too much defensively about Liverpool. I just don't think you can invest right now. And we've seen Liverpool go out in the transfer window and sign Jeremy Jacquet over the last few weeks, but he's not going to be a Liverpool player until the summer. So although they've got the signing done, he's not going to be there for a few more months. I have to say, as a Liverpool fan, I wouldn't mind him in the door now, actually, in reality. I don't know, Harry, the first sort of 20 to 30 minutes of this game, I was super unimpressed with Liverpool, really unimpressed with my team. And I thought the game plan that Newcastle came with to sit kind of, deep-ish and hit us on the break. I think, you know, even Eddie Howe said in his post-match, you know, they wanted to go for real pace in behind our back line. So they started with the Elangas and the Gordons and players like that. And they didn't start either Vissa or Valtomada. So, and the game plan worked. For 20, 30 minutes, it worked. And it wasn't really until Ekitike and in particular Wirtz stepped up and did the business that we really got into the game. So as an Ekitike owner, you of course, you're happy this week. You've had to be patient though, right? That goal or the two that he scored are kind of overdue. He had 14 shots without success in his previous three game weeks. So listen, he had three starts, no goals. You had to be patient there, but at 8.8 million, getting a brace is absolutely what we want now. Now, I don't expect him to be on penalties either. I think Mo's going to continue to take the penalties. So there is a little bit of a question mark as to whether you want to pay that premium price bracket for a striker that hasn't got the penalties. But if he and Wirtz continue to link up in the way that they have, I mean, it looks so, so good. And Wirtz is the form FPL midfielder now, right? And he's, I'd say only, he's going to cost you 8.3 million. So he is a little bit on the pricey side, but I was going to say only simply because he's taken a couple of price decreases. He was 8.5, I think, to start the season. Yeah, I like them both. I like them both. And if you look at the Liverpool fixtures coming up, of course, it's that City game up next, which I mean, I have some renewed hope for. You know, I was looking at it a few weeks out thinking, I'm not looking forward to Manchester City coming to Anfield. But actually looking at the Spurs game, which we'll discuss in a bit, I think both Ekitike and Wirtz can get at that City back line. Again, I'm not looking at Liverpool defensively for that game. But yeah, going forward, that looks like an all right fixture. And then it's Sunderland and Forest, West Ham and Wolves. I think from game week 26, or certainly from 27, because Sunderland away is a tricky little fixture, but from game week 27, a lot of FPL managers would have been looking at Liverpool, me included. But I think you can go early. And I think if you've got Hugo, if you've got Ekitike, if you've got Wirtz, you can absolutely stick and play them against Manchester City and Sunderland away, no doubt.
Yeah, I actually think looking at the next three fixtures, Manchester City at home, Sunderland away, Forest away, that for the attackers, this is probably the best out of the next three, because we know that going away to Sunderland, teams have really struggled there. The only team at home not to have lost so far this season. Going away to Forest under Sean Dyche, they've started to look a little bit better defensively as well. But we know that Manchester City are going to want to play. They're going to try and, you know, create chances much more than maybe Sunderland and Forest will in that game. So there will be space for those Liverpool attackers, which, yeah, I have to say I needed something from Ekitike, having held him and not done particularly well over the past couple of weeks in terms of actual output. But the couple of goals and everything I saw from Liverpool in that game made me very confident to hold him for this run. I don't think we can say the same thing with such confidence about Newcastle. Of course, they play midweek against Manchester City. They won't double even if they manage to turn it around, but they could blank if they do turn it around in game week 31. But even that, they then have the Champions League qualifiers, the only English team in the Champions League to have to play those. Brentford at home, Spurs away, City away, Everton at home, United and Chelsea. If you're still holding a Bruno Guimaraes, a Anthony Gordon, a Malik Chow, a Lewis Hall, is now a good time and a good excuse to jump off them with them looking a little bit off it at the moment?
I think it probably is. Yeah, particularly when we look at the midfielders that we maybe want in FPL right now. There's a lot of options, right? A lot of options in that midfield. I mean, they missed Bruno Guimaraes massively, didn't they? I think they missed Joe Linton as well, but they missed Bruno G. Like you wouldn't believe. I think they've lost all 9 Premier League games in which he's not been available to play. So yes, I think it does feel like an okay time to get off of those guys if you want to, despite the Gordon goal. Obviously, I mean, that's the first goal that he scored from open play in the league for a very long time. I haven't got the stat in front of me, but it doesn't feel like he's scored for a very long time from open play. So yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's probably an okay time to get off of Newcastle assets, particularly when you say their fixtures in the league look a little bit more, you know, they do look tricky and they've got games elsewhere in other competitions that, you know, they're going to need those players for. So yeah, I think it's a fine time to get off of it, to get off of Newcastle. We've discussed the double game week. We've touched on it a bit there, Harry, in terms of, you know, the Chelsea assets that we might want. We probably should therefore cover Arsenal as well, because they are the bookies' favourites to have the double game week in game week 26. Certainly they look like the favourites to go through.
I'm not sure we need to. I think we can just talk about the Chelsea assets who are going to double. Their turnaround is absolutely on the cards. No, but I agree. A lot of us expecting Arsenal to double. Yeah, I think the big thing is most of us have a triple up, but if you're a Bukayo Saka owner, what does that mean for you?
What do you do? Yeah, what do you do? What do you do with Saka then? I mean, I was going to launch into a whole kind of thing about Declan Rice there, because conversely to the Chelsea conversation where we're saying, well, you know, we don't really want to invest in them defensively. We want to invest in them offensively. I think the complete opposite can be said about Arsenal right now. I mean, I know they've got the 4-0 here against Leeds and they've got a couple from open play, which is nice. But the stats leading up to this game suggested that open play XG for Arsenal was just not there, right? We know what they're all about from set pieces. We put that to one side, but open play XG was low. This is now, you know, Rice over the last 4 game weeks, no returns, although the underlying stats are still there, right? He's created 12 chances in that time. He's got 1.47 XA expected assists. So is there an assist imminent for Declan Rice? Maybe his owner's, you know, a bit unlucky over the last 4 game weeks. But yeah, you're right about Saka. How can we invest that amount of our FPL budget in a player, even if he does have a double game week? How can we invest that amount of money in a midfielder like that? It's very, very difficult to invest in them offensively, I think. Defensively is a different conversation, right? This is the 6th time that Gabriel's got defensive contributions. Even Timber, I'm starting to lose a little bit of patience with Timber. He does like a yellow card, doesn't he? And he's not quite as good as the defensive contributions as some of his peers in that Arsenal back line. But talk to me about your thoughts, Arsenal, offensively, because if they do get that double game week, we're going to want to go there, I think. But who and how, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, so I'm one of the people who has double Arsenal attack. So I've got Rice and I've got Saka on top of Gabriel. And I wish I had double defence. Gabriel feels like an absolute lock, but I do think that Timber is still a great pick. He's top for expected goal involvement amongst all defenders over the course of the season. Now, a couple of years ago, dare I say it in front of you, we were talking about Trent with doing a very similar thing, and he was in all of our teams. Yeah. And eventually, he might blank a couple of games, but eventually those points will start to come. And every week I'm looking at Timber, I'm seeing the positions that he's taken up, and I'm feeling quite fortunate that I'm coming away without him getting more than he is. So I still think that actually looking at it now, Gabriel and Timber are probably the first two Arsenal that I'd look to own. And then whoever else you've got on top of that, I think it's unlikely that it's worth moving between them. If you've got a Rice, a Saliba, a David Raya, I'd probably stick with whoever that third is. Saka is the one where it becomes a little bit more difficult. Now, we don't know if he's going to be back available for Sunderland. We might get a hint if he's in the squad or not against Chelsea this evening. As Arteta said, it doesn't look too serious having pulled up in the warm-up against Leeds at the weekend. But there's part of me that would just quite like an excuse to use my transfers to change it up, because even when he is starting, he's just not been worth the money. Now, if he's back available for Sunderland and then he's got a double, it's going to be pretty difficult for me to move off him, even if that is to go and buy Timber. But I could do something like Saka down to Wirtz and Dorgu, who's in my squad, up to Timber. And those two transfers just feel like they upgrade my squad so much, even if Saka does get the double, that someone like a Wirtz, someone like an Enzo Fernandez, a Brian Mbeumo, Matheus Cunha, who we'll talk about, are just outperforming Saka at a much cheaper price. So if he's confirmed fit, then it's a pretty difficult sell if they double. But I would quite like an excuse to move him on, I think.
Yeah, it would be interesting if Saka is out. And you're right, maybe we get a hint from Arteta, but history suggests that perhaps we won't from his press conferences. But if we do get a hint that Saka's out for maybe a sort of medium term, let's say, I might be interested to take a punt. You know, Noni Madueke, very, very good in this game. And a lot of the, you know, if you're a Saka owner like you are, I'd imagine you're feeling a little bit aggrieved that he didn't play this game because a lot of creativity down that side. Madueke had a really good game. Mm. Conversely, we haven't seen Eze in a Premier League lineup now since game week 16. So I just don't think you can touch him, even if they do double. So listen, it feels a bit of a lottery right now, that Arsenal attack. So to be doubled up, I don't envy your position. However, if a double game week does come up, selling a premium asset like Saka ahead of a double game week for Arsenal doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't, I have to say. From a Leeds perspective, bit of a game to forget, I think. Look, they'd only lost one of their last 10 Premier League fixtures before this game, so they come in with some good form. So actually, Arsenal going away to Leeds and getting a 4-0 win, that's a statement win, that, for Arsenal. It really is. But just three shots, only 0.15 XG. I think we have to say props to Arsenal, don't we? Well played for keeping Leeds quiet. So in general, I think just a bit of a game to forget for Leeds. Let's move it on then to Spurs against Manchester City. Only 2 wins in the last 15 for Spurs. So the pressure continues to mount on Thomas Frank's boys. There were some green shoots though, right? There were some reasons to be positive in the second half, at least. I mean, the first half, I think the less said about that from a Spurs perspective, the better. The other half of FPL family, Sam, she was at the game and she texted me at halftime and said, is it coming through as bad on the TV as it is here in the ground? And I said, yes, it is. I mean, the atmosphere was not good, was it? There was a lot of lethargy in the Spurs fans. They really had nothing to cheer about in that first half. But second half, much better. And the player that I thought was particularly good was, I thought, arguably Spurs' best player. And actually, over the last few weeks, I would say, both he and Solanke have been Spurs' best players. But Xavi Simons seems to be finding his feet a little bit, particularly in that second half. He made 5 passes that broke the opposition defensive line versus City. So no player has made more in a Premier League match than that this season. So Xavi Simons definitely stepping up to the plate and doing all the things that Spurs bought him for in the second half, let's say, of that game. Given that the Spurs fixtures continue to be pretty tricky, though, a trip to Old Trafford next, where United on the back of 3 wins are going to, you know, they'll find that tricky, Spurs. Newcastle, Arsenal, Fulham away after that. I don't think, despite those green shoots in that second half, I don't think I'm going to be investing in Spurs. What did you make of Simons and also Dom Solanke? And what did you make of that scorpion kick? I mean, that's an unbelievable finish for that second Spurs goal, no?
Yeah, it feels a little bit like the Chelsea-West Ham game, the tale of two halves in a match.
Very
again, where
so.
Manchester City absolutely dominated the first half and then Spurs came out of nowhere, where I think the majority of us will have absolutely written them off and we're looking at how many it was going to be going into the second half. But yeah, Spurs were very impressive. I think with the upcoming fixtures, as you say, it's probably, can they keep up this consistency for a few games? And then when the fixtures get nicer, do we then look to go and invest? Because yes, Xavi Simons has started to look a little bit better. Dominic Solanke definitely did. But it's probably no surprise to anyone that with the 2 goals that Solanke scored, that he was the highest XG overperformer
of the game week
with a scorpion kick going down as a very low XG chance. And he did go off with a potential knock later on in the game. So we'll have to wait for an update on that. But something I think is really interesting is I'm pretty sure I read a stat that Manchester City are yet to score a second half goal in the Premier League in 2026. And another
really?
Game here
okay.
where they go 2-0 up in the first half, just like they did against Wolves a few weeks ago. And then they fail to score in the second half and they sort of drop off and they don't create as many chances. And now that's pretty difficult to do anything about that from an FPL point of view, but it does feel like Manchester City are not quite at it at the moment compared to what we've seen from them over the past few weeks. Now their fixtures, Liverpool away, Fulham at home, Newcastle at home, Leeds, Forest, West Ham, but they also have a potential blank coming in game week 31 if they reach the cup final. So they feel like quite a difficult one, that at moments they look very good and Semenyo looks great, although I'm not sure he's been particularly great for Haaland's output at the moment, who he has been disappointing. And if there were other expensive players in this game actually looking like they were worthwhile, then we'd be sat here having a conversation about whether we would consider selling him or not. That is not a conversation that I think we're going to be having because of the lack of other expensive options. But the fixtures coming up are still pretty good. But I'm a little bit concerned about the performances. And we saw that, as you said at the beginning, with the amount of people considering moving their captaincy at the moment. That's not just me. There is a lot of confidence dwindling a bit, particularly with Haaland.
Yeah. I mean, and who says that we have to replace him with an expensive asset? I hear you, Harry, in terms of, yeah, well, if you sell Haaland, then there's no other expensive assets to go to. But listen, the mid-price, the budget guys are doing pretty well, right? City have only won one of their last six games now. And like you say, there's definitely a bit of a, there's a malaise there. There's a malaise. Now, I noticed Haaland in this game, four chances created. So it's the most he's managed in any match this season, right? So creativity-wise, at least the underlying stats suggest, he did all right in this game week. But that's now only one goal in his last seven. And listen, for an asset that's worth that much to us or is going to cost us that much of our FPL budget, we want the Haaland that we've seen earlier on in the season. We want the Haaland that we saw last season and in seasons gone by, which is, you know, permacap, almost like the guy you would trust with your captaincy armband. When all else fails, if you're unsure where to go, you stick it on Erling Haaland. Well, you're right. FPL managers are starting to go against it. And when I look at my team for next week, when I looked at how I was going to set my team up for game week 25, I don't have the armband on Haaland right now. I currently have it on Bruno Fernandes, by the way. Now, we've got plenty of football to go this week. It might change. I can change my mind if I want to. But listen, gone are the days where I would just go, oh, it's on Haaland, and then I might think who else I might want it on. At the moment, I've gone for Bruno Fernandes. I haven't even thought about putting it on Haaland right now. So, yeah, I think there's starting to be a case for selling Haaland. I'm not doing it yet. I think I'm scared. I'm too scared of the ownership, Harry, is what it is, right? What is he like? Oh, it's still over 70% owned.
Yeah.
So all he's got to do is get a penalty or score a goal, which of course he can do. And suddenly you get a massive red arrow because everyone's got Haaland, right? I'm more scared of the ownership than I am of the player right now. I know it's maybe a weird thing to say, but just to touch on that relationship that you mentioned there, the Semenyo and Haaland relationship, that's something I definitely noticed in that Spurs game. Haaland has had year after year at City where the team is built around him scoring, right? We know this. And even with players like Doku, when Doku plays on the left, you know, Doku loves going on the outside, cut back to Haaland or cross to Haaland, and that relationship works perfectly. Haaland loves playing with Doku, he's always assisting him. But Semenyo is different, right? Semenyo is a power forward, right? He's a very powerful player. And even when he came into the club a couple of weeks ago, I think I saw some quotes from Pep Guardiola saying, one of the reasons we've bought Semenyo is to take that goal burden away from Haaland a little bit, right? Well, he's definitely doing that. He's definitely doing that. And he's taking on those opportunities. He's getting himself into shooting opportunities. And unlike Doku, who might get his head up and look for his mate Haaland, Semenyo's just taking the shot on. So I think that means two things. One is I think Semenyo is a great asset for us in FPL. And I'm keen to hear your thoughts on him. I've got him in my team. Very happy to have him. Certainly in the short term, when he's not in the Champions or hasn't been in the Champions League squad, he's going to play a lot of Premier League minutes. So I'm very happy to have him. But also, you're right. I think that knock-on relationship with Haaland is not as good for Haaland. So there's my thoughts on Haaland. Semenyo, though, what do you think? Good asset or is he in your team, Semenyo? You have him?
No, I actually sold him just before he left Bournemouth. And
right, okay.
The midfielders I've bought in his place have definitely not done what Semenyo has. And I didn't expect it to start quite as well and the minutes to look as good as it has. But as you say, not being in the Champions League squad has definitely boosted that appeal. Again, I am quite low on transfers in my team, so I've got to prioritize where I use them. And if Manchester City are going to blank in game week 31, they're not going to double. Is it really where I want to be using my transfers? And I think he's a great pick. And as you say, I think his goal threat is great. But since joining Manchester City, he's scored 3 goals in 4 games, and he's not picked up a single bonus point with any of those goals. So it's not quite like someone like a Bruno Fernandes or a Matheus Cunha, where there's other midfielders that we're looking at where a goal is worth not just the 5 points, but it often comes with an extra 1 or 2 on top. Mm. It's sort of a 5-point goal. And maybe that's a good excuse for me to look elsewhere to a player who is better for my team long-term. And we've seen it with Phil Foden, right? There will be a time, as much as it might be difficult to see it at the moment, where Semenyo isn't Pep's favourite. And there will be a time in his City career, whether that's in the immediate future and it impacts in FPL, we don't know. But Foden played 20 games on the bounce and suddenly hasn't started a game since. And when the Champions League comes back around, yes, it's not until about game week 29, but we will start to have those conversations once again. So I think he's a great pick, But I think there are other players who I just think are slightly safer at the moment.
Yeah, I'm as a Semenyo owner, I'm very happy to hear you say that, Harry, because game week 26 to 29 in particular looks great for him. I hear you on the bonus points and stuff, but you know, Sunderland, Forest, West Ham and Wolves between 26 and 29, I'll keep him for that, no doubt about it. And if game week 31 rolls around and obviously the blank game week is there, then yeah, maybe I move him on then, but I'll keep him for the short term, no doubt about it. But you are right, there are plenty of other options, and we probably should talk about the other half of Manchester. Let's talk about Manchester United, a resurgent Manchester United. Now, three wins back-to-back under Michael Carrick. And this one in particular, I mean, talk about character, right? How many times in the past have we seen Manchester United maybe winning a game, then they get pegged back, and then the United fans in Old Trafford gets a little bit nervous, you know? The goal by Kevin in the 91st minute, by the way, for Fulham was absolute belter. We've talked about Solanke's scorpion kick being, you know, maybe goal of the weekend. But Kevin will have a thing or two to say about that. An unbelievable strike, wasn't it? And in the past, the nerves creep in for Manchester United. You know, they even go on to concede another goal and they lose that game. But nothing of it. Sesko pops up with a 94th minute winner. This is a different Manchester United we are seeing. And in FPL, we've suddenly got a ton of different options, particularly in that midfield. Now, given that Sesko didn't start this game, I don't think we're going to go there yet. I like this player, by the way. I think he'll be in our FPL thoughts at some stage later on this season. But for now, we're looking at the Manchester United midfield. And that was Bruno Fernandes. That was his seventh double-digit haul of the campaign, which is the joint second most of any player, right? And what we love about captaincies, what we've loved about Haaland in previous weeks this season and in the past, is that double-digit haul potential. That's what we want from our captaincy. We want explosiveness, don't we? And Bruno's got it in abundance, right? That's also, he's now got 12 Premier League assists this season. That's the most. He's only got two blanks in his last 12 game weeks. And in that 12 game weeks, he's had five of those seven double-digit hauls. So I'm here for it, Harry. I'm saying that maybe Bruno Fernandes is our new permacap over Haaland. Are we seeing a changing of the guard when it comes to our armband? What we're saying, and I'd also like your opinion on Cunha and Mbeumo, right? Because they are also really good options for Manchester United. Not instead of Bruno, I don't think, but maybe to go alongside him, no?
Yeah, I mean, Bruno looks as close to essential in FPL as we've got at the moment. He feels like if you were wildcarding this week, he'd be the first player that I'd put on the team sheet. And that would definitely be ahead of Haaland. I've owned Bruno for pretty much the whole season, and at the beginning of the season, there was a few question marks. He was missing penalties. They didn't look so good. But as you say, recently, since about game week 13, where even under Amarin, before he got injured, he was unstoppable. And then since he's come back from injury, 7, 10, 5 and 10, he looked very good once again in that game. And it's almost, what can Manchester United achieve when they play Bruno Fernandes in his best position at number 10? And just with that late winner for Sesko, the assist that he got, if he's playing slightly deeper, he doesn't create that chance. And not many other players in the league could have picked out that pass that he did from the wing to Sesko. So he looks on unstoppable form. The only thing I would say on him is, as much as he is further towards the goal, his goal threat hasn't actually been as good over the past few games. In the last three games, he's failed to register a shot in two of those three. He had 0.00 XG against both Fulham and Manchester City. Now, against Manchester City, he did score and it was ruled out for offside. So there is a little bit of context to be had there. He was also the second biggest XG overperformer of the week, with two returns this week from just 0.28 expected goal involvement. So he has massively outperformed, but that is what he's capable of doing, right? I think he's a great pick, but I do want to see him taking a few more shots like we're used to him seeing, shooting from range, even if it is, because we know he's able to do it. And if he starts adding that on top, then I think we will get to a perma-captain stage with him, unless Haaland manages to turn it around.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, all right. So maybe not perma-captain yet then, but certainly my mind is moving towards that.
Absolutely.
And certainly away from Haaland as perma-captain. Let's see.
If I had to ask you between the other midfielders then, we've got Mateus Cunha, the one who scored but played slightly less minutes. Brian Mbeumo getting minutes up front and then on the wing. Amad just cheaper than both of them. Where do they rank? But also, when you start to consider a name we've mentioned a lot with Florian Wirtz, where do they go in comparison to him in your list?
Oh, God, that's such a good question, isn't it? I think based on what I saw in that game, and we've got lots of stats around all of these guys, but I thought Cunha was fantastic. I just thought he was so good. And I think, you know, one of the things that was maybe putting me off of Cunha a little bit was the fact that actually Dorgu looked as if he had that left wing spot locked down, didn't he? Right. Some fantastic goals, really good performances. Carrick seemed to prefer him over there. But of course, he's out now, right? He's injured for, I think, reportedly up to sort of 10 weeks. So I think Cunha's game time is more or less nailed on. He's only, he's 8 million. So he's kind of teetering on that sort of premium bracket. But 8 million for him seems like a pretty good price. That's his third attacking return in as many matches under Carrick now, right? And he's got four in his last five. So I think if I was going to go there, I'd go Cunha. But anyone that's got Mbeumo, that's not me for any stretch of the imagination saying, you know, should sideways move from Mbeumo to Cunha, because Mbeumo looked threatening as well. And if he's going to continue to play in that nine, in that sort of centre forward position, he's just as good an asset as Cunha. Where I would rank them alongside Wirtz as well, that's a good one, isn't it? It's a tricky one. Listen, the Liverpool fixtures do look good from 26 onwards, right? Even that City game, I think Wirtz could do well against what looked like a pretty leggy-looking Manchester City midfield.
I think I'd put Wirtz top just because I know what I'm getting from him. As you say, I think there might be a time where Sesko starts a game and we don't know where that's going to be or who that's in replace of. And if he keeps playing well, he's going to get closer and closer to that starting lineup. And it doesn't feel like he wants to take Ahmad out of that team at the moment. So based off security, I think I know what I get with Wirtz, whereas I think there is still a slight uncertainty with these Man United mids.
Yeah, Wirtz is definitely more locked in. I think I'd go Wirtz and Cunha at the top, but mm-hmm. it's a difficult one and a good conversation to have. Let's go through the rest of these games then, Harry. So Villa versus Brentford, they've scored 0 goals now from their last 3.78 XG at Villa Park. Aston Villa. So they're really struggling. That's their second successive home defeat to nil. They're 27 shots in this game with no goals, particularly after the red card for Sharda. So they played the majority of this game against 10 men and still couldn't break down Brentford. So some issues maybe for us Rodgers owners, and for those that have got Watkins, if they haven't sold already, then they'll probably be looking at that. I thought Villa's best player by a mile, by the way, was Douglas Luiz. I mean, he's come back to Aston Villa, isn't he? Racked up 3 shots, 5 key passes, narrowly missing out on the bonus. He got 8 DEFCONs, so he was in and around the defensive contributions as well. So only 4.9 million. I don't know if he's going to... I don't think he's going to threaten those midfield spots. Like we've said before a number of times already on this podcast, they are pretty sacred to us, those 5 spots right now. So I don't think he's there. But, you know, a good return for him on his return to Aston Villa. Give me your thoughts on Brentford, though. They've got a really nice fixture swing from game week 27. So I don't know if I'm going to go heavy on Brentford over the next two. It's Newcastle and Arsenal up next. But from 27, I think the likes of Thiago and others will be back on our radar, do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think one of the interesting things from this game is that Collins, who's been quite a popular FPL pick, missed out in the Brentford lineup.
Yeah.
Quite surprisingly. So if you're an owner there and you may have not started him, but I saw a lot of people getting him off the bench for Bukayo Saka, will feel a little bit aggrieved the fact that they kept a clean sheet. This was actually the biggest XG difference of the game week, but not the way round that the score went. Aston Villa outscored Brentford by more XG than any team in the league.
That's crazy.
In this game week, and it ended up with a 1-0 win. I mean, it was the definition of a smash and grab. Villa did create a lot of chances, but I'm interested on Morgan Rodgers. He's one I've always considered every week, can I find a way to buy him? And I've never found a way to do it. He hasn't scored in 7 weeks now. He's picked up 2 assists since he's got those back-to-back 15-pointers against West Ham and Man United. And he's only got more than 0.2 XG in one of those 7 games. He does feel quite expensive when there's lots of other options, like we've just spoken about, doing well in and around it. But I just think it's a hard sell, and you probably feel the same when he's got Bournemouth, Brighton, Leeds and Wolves. Now, when you look at Brentford, I feel like I've got a similar situation with Thiago, that the next two are not great, but the long-term fixtures look pretty good for him. But I don't own João Pedro, and if I'm not going to sell Haaland or Ekitike, Thiago is the only forward that I look in my forward line that I could sell to João Pedro, and that is a very difficult decision. Now, if Chelsea end up doubling, it gets easier, I think. But if Chelsea don't double, and I'm probably going to want to go back to Thiago, it feels a much more difficult sell, despite the fact I don't think he looked particularly involved going forward. But they did play a lot of the game with 10 men.
Mm. Yeah, I hear you on the Rodgers thing. If I look at my midfield, I've got my 2 Fernandezes in there. As I said before, I'm not going to switch those out. I've been singing Semenyo's praises. I'll be keeping him. So really, I'm looking at kind of Harry Wilson and I'm looking at Rodgers in particular. Going, yeah, you know, could I be using those spots a bit better? I don't know. Is it the fixtures might might persuade me to hold on to Rodgers for a bit, but yeah, definitely in my thoughts. Definitely in my thoughts. Let's do Wolves versus Bournemouth. Then back-to-back wins for Bournemouth in the Premier League. And the star of the show for me, I know he played sort of 65, 70 minutes, as tends to be the case with him. He does tend to be rotated and not get the 90 minutes often. But in the battle for the cheap third striker in our teams, I think Krupe Jr. at 4.7 now. He's taking a bit of a price rise, but he's still super cheap. I mean, this is a player, right? This is a player. That was his eighth Premier League strike of the season, his fourth successive start. We've heard in post-match interviews from Andre Iraola about how does he get him and Evan Nilsson working together. So that whole narrative we had a few weeks back about, is it him? Is it Evan Nilsson? Is he a rotation risk? I don't think he is now, Harry. I don't think he is. And only Haaland's got a better minutes per goal ratio than Krupe in the league right now. I love him and I don't have him in my team. Currently, my third striker spot is Mark Guiu, which is a problem for two reasons. One is he doesn't play for your lot. And equally, if you've got a double game week coming up for Chelsea, I do not want my third Chelsea spot being taken up by a non-playing forward. So Guiu to Krupe looks on for me and I've got the money in the bank to do it this week, potentially. What do you make of him? He looks sensational, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of us have been a little bit cautious on Bournemouth because there's been a lot of January transfer market activity for them. And this has both been going forward and in defence. And it's been, will Krupe keep his place? Will Senesi still be there? Will James Hill at 3.9 keep his place? But now that the transfer window is shut, I think Senesi looks great now that he's staying. I think James Hill at 3.9 looks great. And as you say, Krupe's minutes suddenly look very secure given he feels like their main goal threat at 4.7. But as you say, there's suddenly a lot of forwards that we want. So it's whether he finds a way. But if you're going with a sort of two striker formation and you want a cheap one, it's definitely got to be him.
Yeah. You've mentioned in there, shout out for James Hill, right? 3.9 million in FPL. Super, super cheap. His sixth successive start alongside Senesi. And if you've got Senesi, then great. He's also great. But James Hill, that bit cheaper and his sixth successive defensive contribution bonus for James Hill as well. So yeah, looks like a sensational pick. Let's go last few games. A game that I really don't want to talk about. Brighton versus Everton. Goodness me, I had Tarkowski and I had Bart Verbruggen in goal. So that 94th minute, maybe 95th minute goal from Beto, out my Verbruggen clean sheet. Oh, Harry, what are we saying about that?
I mean, I also had Dewsbury Hall in this game who missed a big chance. No. So I had Tarkowski cleared off the line. I had Dewsbury Hall miss a big chance. I then had Verbruggen lose his clean sheet in the 97th minute and it not have any Tarkowski or Dewsbury Hall involvement.
Oh, and let's not discuss this game.
Ended up with 7 points from three players in this one game. But all of them were so close to getting so much more as well. And that is the frustration with FPL. I do think Dewsbury Hall is probably the one that I'd pick out alongside.
Yeah.
I know Barry and Beto have been rotating goals, but Barry is starting to get a few more minutes. I just wish we needed a cheap midfielder more than we do because Dewsbury Hall had over 0.4 XG in this game. He had a couple of good chances. He was probably their main goal threat apart from the last minute goal from Beto. He's definitely one to consider. Again, it's just the fact that there are so many good midfielders and we don't really need cheap options at the moment, which makes him a difficult buy and a difficult recommendation. But he did look very good. He's coming back from injury. He's on set pieces and his minutes are getting better. So he's probably the only one I'd consider. But if Chelsea turn it around against Arsenal tonight, Everton will also double in game week 26.
Yes,
and suddenly they'll all be back on radar for us.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And a shout out for James Garner as well. Only 5.2 million racked up defensive contributions for the eighth time in 9 game weeks. So there are some options. I agree. If that ends up being a double game week for Everton, there will be some conversation, I think. Forest versus Palace then. The second to last game for us, penultimate game for us. Strand Larsen incoming at Crystal Palace, despite the fact Mateta didn't get his move to Italy, which he was looking for in the transfer window. Does Strand Larsen come straight in and be on pens, Harry? Is he the answer that we're all looking for at Palace? The fixtures are great for them, by the way, although they've only just now kept one clean sheet across their last 10 matches in all competitions. So they're not a team that we would immediately look at and go, oh, we're screaming investment, particularly from a defensive perspective, which given that we were early on in this season talking about Richards and Munoz and Gehi when he was there, I think defensively, I'm not going there at the moment. But Strand Larsen, go on. Could he be? He couldn't get a game for Wolves. Does he come straight in and be an FPL hero for us?
So I do think he probably goes straight in. Now, we're still waiting on a bit of an update on Mateta, because it sounds like he failed his medical over the past couple of days. So whether his fitness is a bit of a concern or not, we'll have to wait and see what Glasner says. But if Mateta is out, I think they do need a striker in there. As much as they've played with Brennan Johnson, Saar in that position, they need a focal point. And he's just 6.1 with Burnley and Wolves at home over the next couple of games. I, unfortunately, am a Chris Richards owner, and he's actually moved to left centre back. Now, he's found a bit of goal threat, which did come against my team, Chelsea, when he was on my bench, which wasn't something I particularly wanted to see. But it does feel like there are a couple of games on the horizon where we could look at Palace, but the form just doesn't seem to be there. There's only one man we can talk about from this game, and that is the hero, that is Elliot Anderson.
32 points. You love this guy.
32 points in the last six game weeks. Now, incredible. He is starting to get a little bit of attention. And I would offer a little word of caution if you're going to buy Elliot Anderson. There will be weeks where he doesn't hit DAFCON. Maybe he goes four, then he gets a couple, then he gets four. And there'll be another cheap midfielder who scores 3 and 3, right? And if you're going to buy Elliot Anderson, you have to be able to hold your nerve in those situations. And I have to admit, if I'd have had more transfers over the past few weeks, I probably wouldn't have been able to hold my nerve in some of those other ones. So I've been quite fortunate that I've been forced into making other transfers elsewhere, dealing with other issues and other more important things, that he's never been the biggest issue. And then suddenly he's got 7-5-5-7 over the past few weeks. But DEFCON here, 3 bonus points to go with it. If you need a cheap option, he's never going to be the most exciting player, but he's never going to be your biggest issue. And that's why I love having him in my team at the moment.
Yeah, look at the smile on your face. The podcast listeners can't see the smile on your face. He epitomizes the change that we've seen in FPL this season. I think he defines it, right? He's only got 0.18 XGI in this game. So barely involved, right? Barely involved, but still a very tidy haul. 7 points this week, as you say, bonus points, DEFCON, the 8th consecutive game week in which he's picked up DEFCON. He epitomizes everything that's different about FPL this season. And if you are, like you are, playing the game, with that in mind, then he's a great pick. He's a really, really good pick. Sunderland Burnley, the last game we got to cover. This was the lowest XG of any team in a game this season from Burnley, 0.06. Really not very good at all. I don't think there's a lot to discuss in this game other than Sunderland defence, particularly at home, continues to be good. And the guy we've got to talk about is Mukiele. He is relentless, isn't he? 4.5 million. That's 9 straight returns. So 9 Premier League games where he's got something, either a goal or assist or a DEFCON, right? 55 points in his last 9 games and still only 13.5% owned in FPL. Yeah, round of applause for Mukiele.
Round of applause to Mukiele if you own him, but I can't look at this every week with him getting a 9-pointer. It hurts so much. And his ownership it's still low, but it's getting high enough where I'm starting to feel it and it's starting to hurt. I actually did a bit of a comparison last night to one of the biggest FPL folklore players in John Lundstrom, to see how he was racking up against him. Now, in the big Lundstrom season, he scored 144 points. Mukiele also started at 4 million, is on 111 already. He's only 33 points behind what Lundstrom got with 14 game weeks to go.
Wow.
This means he needs to average 2.3 points per match compared to the 5.2 that he's got so far this season. If he keeps on at the record and the level he's going, he will outscore Lundstrom by 30 or so points easily, as a 4 million defender. Yeah. Does that make him a better pick? Or is there just a world that we have in our minds that Lundstrom was playing midfield, so he was so good and just so exciting? But actually, Mukiele's numbers and performance in FPL is better than we ever saw from that.
What you're saying is Mukiele is on his way to FPL Hall of Fame status.
He has to, but low key doing it.
Yeah, I love it. No, I love it. I'm with you. The Lundstrom season, it did feel like he was a real outlier. So yeah, why would we not look at someone like Mukiele and say that he can and probably will end up doing the same thing? I think because this season we've had a number of options at 4.0, haven't we? I think early on in the season we had Estev from Burnley, and there's been a few different, fifth defender choices. Whereas in the Lundstrom season, it was just him, and he was playing out of position, and he was bringing home the points every week. It was like, wow, he's in everyone's team and he's a hero. Whereas with Mukiele, I think in a season where we've got a little bit of budget knocking about, we don't necessarily have to have the 4.0 defenders, and there's some options there. Maybe he's gone he's gone way under the radar, Mukiele. I don't have him. And like you, he's I saw that result last night. I just thought, oh, another clean sheet for Mukiele. And then looked at it in a bit more detail because I wasn't watching the game. I was out last night. And then he got an assist as well. I'm like, oh my days, this guy just keeps racking up the points every week. So only a matter of time, Harry, before we get future FPL Hall of Famer Mukiele in our teams.
Absolutely. So those are all the FPL games from the weekend, but we do have some very big cup games, both tonight on Tuesday and on Wednesday as well, because although the Manchester City Newcastle game won't cause an early double, it will confirm who's going to blank in game week 31. So on top of the Arsenal Chelsea game that takes place tonight, which will confirm whether we've got Arsenal and Wolves doubling or Chelsea and Everton, it is worth holding your transfers at least until we see who doubles in game week 26, but also to see who blanks in game week 31 after the Manchester City Newcastle game tomorrow night, if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Patience is key, guys. Patience is key. Kelly, Jules and Sam will be back on Thursday. They'll be confirming what game week 26 looks like and what that should mean for your transfers and chip strategy.
Absolutely. And if you haven't already, please don't forget to join the FPL pod mini league. The code is XY6XPL. We've got doubles and blanks coming up at this point in the season, so make sure you're in there to see how far you can climb up that league. Lee, it has been great to be back. Chelsea winning, Liverpool winning, green arrows all around. It's been a good week.
Happy days. Green arrows, Harry. Good luck, everyone.